97.5, The Fanatic.
Rich Hoffman of The Athletic was willing to join us on this 4th of July holiday on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. Rich, thanks so much for joining us. How are you today?
I'm great, Dee. You know, just celebrating the holiday like everybody else.
Yeah, in different ways than we normally do, but yes. It's summer. Rich,
It's not the same as usual.
No, it is not. It's the summer of different. It's been the year of different, I should say.
Yes.
All right, Rich, let's first start, and I know there's a couple articles on The Athletic, and there's also like kind of a conversation between you and Derek Bodner that we can hit on as well. But we've been discussing rotation because it always seems like it comes back to you put together this roster, or Elton Brand and Brett Brown did, and it was different, and, you know, bully ball, whatever we wanted to say. But now here you are. Do you have a preference? I personally don't know that I have a preference, but I want them to make a choice, and I want them to stick to it, of bringing Al Horford off the bench or Shake Milton. To me, that would be my choice that I would be making. What choice would you be making? And it can be somebody different.
Yeah, I think it's a complicated one. I did a piece a few weeks ago where I tried to figure out what the rotation would realistically look like, and I'm sure I wasn't taking as much time as Brett Brown in the front office, and I don't have all of the numbers that were in front of them. It's a tougher exercise than you think. Like, I think in the ideal world, you would insert Milton into the starting lineup for Horford. That would be the player I would look at. I guess my question would be, and this is after doing that exercise, is that playing Milton in the starting lineup then also it makes it tougher to play him as the backup point guard, which is a role that I think Brett Brown the other day, you know, in his words, he says he's put his hand up and he has he's given the Sixers, I would say, more upside than the guys that they had at the beginning of the year, Trey Burke and Howell Neto, and I think they tried Josh Richardson at the beginning. So it's tough. And I think the question is that they have to face right now is that you can't just play Al Horford for 12 minutes a game or 15 minutes a game as Joel Embiid's backup, whatever. So when are you going to put him in the, like, when are you going to play him together with Embiid? Is it going to be at the start with all the starters or in the middle, like with Embiid and backup units? And I think, you know, when putting it all together, I think even though they made the decision, like Clippers game that Brett Brown talks about, they went through the decision to put Horford in the coming off the bench, I do think it's a tougher choice than you think, because the starting lineup has been pretty good when they have played the 19 games or so.
And so help me here. I think it's making a choice of, do you want to start your game as strong defensively as possible, or do you want to make sure you're not having an offensive liability, which seems to be Embiid, Simmons, and Horford together, which, quite frankly, I think you should be able to correct that with spacing and moving the ball, you know, and maybe calling more plays of whose turn it is to go to the post.
Yeah, it's tough. I just think they underestimated how clunky the fit between those three specific players were. But like, look, I agree with you. Their offense or their defense, when those guys have played together and when the whole starting lineup has played together, has been excellent. And it's been so good that, you know, clunky offenses aside, they've been, you know, not as good as like the J.J. Redick, Jimmy Butler starting lineup.
Sure.
Covington started
right.
Once.
Yeah, yeah.
But they've been pretty good. And I think, you know, you're looking at a season where you don't have any options going into the playoffs where it's like, all right, we have our bread and butter and that makes perfect sense. You have to make some trade-offs somewhere. I agree with you. I would start Horford. And I think one of the things that has been lost in this is that, I guess it's two things. One is that Horford the other day admitted that he probably wasn't where he needed to be health-wise. And I think that it probably happened sometime in December. He is like, he reminds me of a hockey player in that seems like it pains him to tell you about injuries like some other NBA players. Like like Josh Richardson will be like, yeah, my hamstring stinks right now. And, you know, it's really bothered me. Al Horford's a little bit different. And him even admitting that, I think the time off probably helped him health-wise. That's one part of it. The other part of it is Al Horford as the backup center, which is a big reason why they acquired him. You know, and I think you can make the argument that they would have been able to fill that position for a lot less money. But that worked. Like, him and Ben Simmons together, it worked. Like, they can play faster Al Horford can space the floor for Ben Simmons.
Yep.
You know, all of those things. So that worked. It's a tricky thing. I do think they're just going to be a little bit better on both ends of the floor, offensively and defensively. So, you know, it comes down to a question of, do you want to start defensively, you know, with Horford and your strongest lineup, or do you want to get Simmons and Embiid going early? And I think someone like Milton probably would do a better job of that than Horford.
Right, which is probably the way they will lean towards, especially because Horford is such a willing teammate to do whatever they see as an organization is best for the whole group. So that I won't be surprised. All right, let me ask you, because we've heard, and I love Brett Brown's optimism often, but we have heard so many times that Joel Embiid is in great shape coming off of injury. We have heard this coming into a training camp in years past. When he said it the other day, and I say, well, we're going to be able to see him soon anyhow, so it's, if he's not really this, it kind of doesn't bode well for Brett either. Do you believe that he's in this top-tip shape that Brett's saying he is?
That's a tricky one. I agree with you that it's something we've heard before and has not come out to be the actual case. I do think, like, in general, this is probably the hardest time for a basketball player to stay in shape ever. You know, there was a couple months there. I'm sure they could find, you know, a gym, but it's not like they can play 5-on-5 with any of their teammates. I guess one level of optimism I would have, and I know Embiid has been working with Drew Hamlin pretty hard, and they seem to think he's been in good shape. I guess the one positive is that in some of the past years, these off seasons, this off season in particular, he has been dealing with injuries that have limited him. And I think that really the only off season he had where he was fully healthy was two off seasons ago. And you saw what happened then. He came out of the blocks, you know, going 100 miles an hour, and he was playing almost like a borderline MVP candidate at the beginning of that 2018-19 season. And then he, you know, the injuries, he probably went a little bit too hard, and the injuries caught up with him by the end of the season. I guess that would be the one level of optimism. At least, like, if he's healthy now and he can see the finish line in this alternate reality that we are living in, where he does not have to get through an 82-game season to get through the games that really matter, I would say that's probably a level of optimism. But like you said, I have heard this before, and it has not been the case. But it's pretty darn important.
Yeah, slightly.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Just from a work standpoint, Rich, and I know we saw ESPN televised because they sent their first reporter into the bubble yesterday, but what will it be like for you guys as writers? And will it be all Zoom? And do you trust that you'll get what you need to be able to do your job covering this, quote, restart plus playoffs?
Yeah, it's going to be tricky for sure. I do think, for the most part, it's going to be all Zoom. I would just say, like, in general, from what little I've heard, it's going to be very expensive to send
anybody down. Yes,
people down there. And, you know, I don't even know what my company's plans are, honestly, for it. We haven't really talked about it. But, like, just in general, it's going to be tough. Yeah, it's, you know, I do think, like for me personally and for some of the people I work with at The Athletic, like, I think we have a background in kind of the X's and O's and the statistical parts and breaking down the game. So I do think we'll be okay there, but I do hope, you know, at least for, you know, and I do understand that, like, we are living in unprecedented times. Like, I get that the access is not going to be great right now. I hope there are consistent Zoom calls and we're able to, you know, communicate with the coaches and the players well enough. But I do hope, you know, moving forward, hopefully as we get out of this pandemic, we don't lose the aspect of like the media telling stories about players, and,
right?
And
exactly.
Features and those things. Those in the past couple of years, those have been some of my my favorite things to do. And you know, it doesn't always happen, but like, you know, I just hope that this is not a precursor for the NBA and every sport taking away media access, because I do think there is still a lot of value in getting to know these players as people and learning both, you know, on court things and then their stories off the court as well.
All right, last thing, Rich, before I let you go, do you think they have a chance of making some noise louder than what we have seen the last 2 years in the postseason?
Yeah, I think they're going to be better than what we've seen in the regular season. I guess that's how I would
phrase it. Yes.
I think their defense is just like, I think they were like sixth in defensive efficiency during the season. Like, they have the potential to be one of the two or three best defenses in the league, maybe the best defense. And I think the playoff style, both in, you know, just how the game is played and the familiarity of seeing a team seven times, like we saw that against Toronto last season.
Where yes.
Even with J.J. Redick, who is not a great defender, he works hard and he executes the scheme really well, but, you know, obviously has some limitations defensively. Their size just overwhelmed what I thought ended up being like a very good NBA champion, and they made an NBA champion look bad on the offensive side.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I do think that's going to carry over. I do think, like, you know, if they were to play a team like Toronto or Boston, like, you know, there's no Kawhi Leonard waiting for them. And I do think their offense is going to be better. Like, I think Embiid in particular is going to be, even if he's not in the best of shape, I think we're going to see better from him in the playoffs than we did in the regular season. Horford, I said that too. So, like, yeah, just in general, I think they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs. They're going to be better in the regular season. Now, what does that mean, though? Is that a competitive loss to a great Milwaukee team in the second round? Is that a coin flip series against very good Boston and Toronto teams?
Sure.
Like, I would say, like, we're going to see better from them than the regular season. But ultimately, I think, like, the lack of a great perimeter offensive player is going to be their undoing at some point in the playoffs. But, yeah, I do think they're going to make more noise than the current number six seed would lead you to believe in a normal season.
Rich, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And for people out there, read The Athletic. Rich, I don't know your Twitter. What is that?
It's Rich_Hoffman, 1F, 2Ms, which is unusual for people with that last name.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm glad I asked. Thank you again. And I'll keep reading your stuff. I love it. So have a great rest of the 4th of July, and we'll talk and catch up later.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Rich. Rich Hoffman on the Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.